So I have this friend and colleague named Laura. Laura and I met during prospective student days at the seminary we both ended up attending. And when we started classes, we found we had a lot in common. I've talked about Laura before, about how she and I still talk every week and have done so for the past almost 10 years now. And I've talked about some of the adventures we have shared since then. The first big adventure was a trip to Arizona in the summer of 2018 to support No More Deaths volunteers who were facing charges for leaving water in the desert for immigrants. And after I came back from that trip, I talked about it, but I didn't share this part. We had both heard about this trip, Laura and I, which was being organized by the UU Service Committee, and we'd both thought about going, but we had let some fears that we had around it keep us from really considering it seriously. The call was for clergy to come out and accompany the No More Deaths folks into the desert to drop off jugs of water, and therefore to publicly and blatantly risk arrest for the same charges that those folks were facing. We would also learn about the culture of migration and the border control practices that had made desert crossings so much more dangerous. We would hear about the work No More Deaths had been doing to help migrants. And we would witness Operation Streamline, these court proceedings of 75 detained migrants at a time. It would be in July, so very hot, in a climate I had never experienced. We hadn't heard yet if the UU Service Committee would be able to help with bail if we were arrested, or whether there was financial aid available to help with travel costs. We were afraid of likely confrontations with Border Patrol. We talked about all these things and other things that were holding us back. We shared our concerns. We talked through them together until I said, "Okay, how about this? I'll go if you go." And so we did. Courage. It takes more. When I first saw the title of this poem, before I actually heard it, I thought it would be about things that take more courage, about extraordinary acts that individuals have to find great courage to do. And then I listened to it, and I started thinking about courage in a whole different way. No house without mortar. Heroes are heroes because we make them heroes. This isn't a poem about how to find courage. It's a poem about how courage arises when we work together, when we share goals and risks, when we lift each other up. This is grounded in the idiom that Philippa Yah de Villiers uses and calls the universal ethic of humanity in the African way. A person is a person because of other people. So heroes aren't just called heroes in hindsight, they're made. They're made by the support of their peers, their communities, their comrades. Working together toward a better world creates a mechanism for courage to arise in each of us. Courage, my friend, you do not walk alone. Do y'all know the story of Rosa Parks? I'm sure many of you do. She was a Black woman who played a pivotal role in the civil rights movement of the 1950s and 60s. And the thing she is most known for is her refusal to give up her seat on a bus for a white man in Montgomery, Alabama, which broke the law of bus segregation. She was sitting in the colored section of the bus, and when the white section filled up, she was told by the bus driver to get up and move back, so that they could expand the white section, and so this white man would sit down, could sit down. The story I heard about this growing up was that she was tired, and that she had simply had enough of this unfair law and decided on the spot she wasn't going to obey it. And she didn't feel like getting up, and so she didn't. And I remember thinking how brave it was for this woman to decide this on her own in this moment of exhaustion. Just, my feet are tired. I don't want to get on them. I've learned since then where some of that courage came from. Rosa Parks wasn't just a tired Black woman. She was an activist who'd been part of the NAACP for over 10 years. She had organized for justice for Black women victims of sexual violence perpetrated by white men for much of that time. In her autobiography, My Story, she wrote, "People always say that I didn't give up my seat because I was tired, but that isn't true. I was not tired physically, or no more tired than I usually was at the end of a working day. I was not old, though some people have an image of me being old then. I was 42. No, the only tired I was tired of giving in." She made the decision to keep her seat on that bus strategically, knowing that she wasn't the first. Did you know she wasn't the first? There were four other women who had done the same thing over the course of the previous 9 months, and that she had a community of support behind her. She had all of that to bolster her. And as it turned out, that decision and her resulting arrest opened up the opportunity for the NAACP to organize the Montgomery bus boycott, which started the following Monday. And those leaders got the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. involved. And when that boycott ended 382 days later, it had stimulated activism and participation from the South in the national civil rights movement, and it gave Dr. King national attention as a rising leader. Heroes are heroes because we make them heroes. Rosa Parks wasn't made a hero as we looked back on her over time, and she wasn't an individual who made a choice in a vacuum. She was made a hero by the people who organized with her, who supported her work, and who made it possible for her to make that strategic decision that solidified the course of the civil rights movement. Same goes for Dr. King, for that matter. The way I learned about him growing up focused so much on him as an individual, as the leader of the movement, right? But he surrounded himself with companions who shared their thoughts, their creativity, their strengths, and their faith with him and with each other. And so they each found the courage to play their various, very important roles in the work. I remember when I went to Selma in 2015 for the 50th anniversary of the march. One of the keynote speeches was from the Reverend Mark Morrison Reed, who's done decades of research on the history and the experiences of Black Unitarian Universalists and on the roles UUs played in the civil rights movement. Mark is the writer of this piece that I have shared more than a few times in worship. He writes, "The central task of the religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind each to all. There is a connectedness, a relationship discovered amid the particulars of our own lives and the lives of others. Once felt, it inspires us to act for justice." He continues, "It is the church that assures us that we are not struggling for justice on our own, but as members of a larger community. The religious community is essential, for alone our vision is too narrow to see what must be seen, and our strength too limited to do all that must be done. Together our vision widens, and our strength is renewed." So this piece isn't about courage specifically, but I think that this kind of courage that arises when we share the work is woven into this widening vision and this renewed strength. Mark's keynote in Selma in 2015 was about relationship, was about the bonds that bind each to all. He talked about how in March of 1965, when Dr. King called on, quote, "clergy of all faiths to join me in Selma," one of his telegrams went to the Unitarian Universalist Association's office. Dana Greeley, our association's president at the time, started making phone calls, and the people he called made more calls, and the call spread throughout UUism like wildfire. Dr. King also knew several UU ministers well enough to call on them personally, and they went. They went. Over 400 of our lay people and 100 of our clergy went to Selma. They went because they heard the call from people, and this was Mark's point, because they heard the call from people with whom they were in relationship, who said, "I'll go if you go." or please come with me. You're needed. Until a couple of years ago, I served on the leadership collective for UU Allies for Racial Equity, or ARE, and I'm still an active member there. ARE is a partnership organization to diverse revolutionary UU multicultural ministries, or DRUM, which is a group of Black, Indigenous, and people of color who support one another in their work in Unitarian Universalism. DRUM used to include white people, but when the white folks started outnumbering the people of color, as happens, DRUM asked them to create their own ally organization. So ARE is a group of people who identify as white, whose mission is, quote, to take bold action to undo white supremacy in our Unitarian Universalist faith communities, and specifically to educate white folks about racism and its impact on all of us, and to dismantle it. It was a lot of work being on that leadership collective, both externally, because my God, there is so much to be done, and also internally, because I was also learning about the ways I internalize white supremacy culture and what I could do differently. And it was sometimes scary work, not just hard work, right? Because change is scary. Because I didn't want to do harm while creating relationships with the people of color to whom I'm accountable. Because standing up for justice can be scary. Because we were a collective, we were committed to doing that work together, to supporting each other when we're unsure or uncomfortable, to sharing how we were doing with each other. The collective was the mortar holding up the house. That was the work of being accountable to our Black, Indigenous, and people of color in Unitarian Universalism. And that was so good, and I miss it. The energy of strength and courage that arose from doing that hard and sometimes scary work together with grace and compassion. We generate that kind of courage for each other whenever we come together to work for justice. And there are so many shapes of injustice. October is full of recognitions for people in so many marginalized communities who have found or need to find the courage to be who they are. It's LGBTQ History Month, Hispanic Heritage Month, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Bullying Prevention Month, ADHD Awareness Month. Tomorrow is Indigenous Peoples Day. And the next day is National Coming Out Day. And so, in recognition of the oppressions faced by the people and in these and other marginalized communities, in support and in a spirit of sharing courage, I invite you to join me in a litany. I will begin. And I invite you to respond with Eva with these words. Take courage. I am with you in this. Take courage. I am with you in this. To the native dwellers of this land seeking recognition or deserving reparations, we say,
take courage. I am with you in this.
To the queer teenager longing for a world that accepts them for who they are, we say,
take courage. I am with you in this.
To the refugee family seeking a safe place for their children's dreams, we say,
take courage. I am with you in this.
To the bullied, the battered, the broken down, we say,
take courage. I am with you in this.
To the Black parents wondering when will the lives of their children truly matter, we say,
take courage. I am with you in this.
To the lonely, the frightened, the dispossessed, we say,
take courage. I am with you in this.
To the hungry and the homeless, to the silenced and the shamed, to the weary and the worried, we say,
take courage. I am with you in this.
To all those for whom your disheveled heart is aching, we say,
take courage, I am with you in this.
Now I'm going to add an unscripted one. To each other, we say,
take courage, I am with you in this.
May it be so. May we do so.